We're learning with Vesla in the Hebrew version, it's volume 1 on page 89. The name of the essay is Ha'esek B'Torah, occupying ourselves with Torah, which also means occupying ourselves in a Torah lifestyle. Shmira Mi'etzahora. This is what protects us from our evil inclination. The Gemara says in Kiddushin, Tanur Rabbanan, the rabbis taught, Tzam Tam. Like we say in the Shema, we say the word Tzam Tem Lo'is Al Yodech. We have the word Tzam Tem, you shall place it. It's talking about the Tefillin. In the Shema we recite, we mention the Tefillin. So we say Tzam Tem, you shall place them. But the rabbis interpret that word Tzam Tem as Tzam Tam, the perfect medication. The perfect remedy, perfect tonic, sam tam, perfect tonic. She'eda chosa shum hatzola, which is to say that it doesn't need to go with something else. It's not, you know, it's not the prescription, isn't, you know, that you take one of these and two of these, or three of these and four of these. It's a perfect remedy, meaning it stands totally by itself. It's totally independent. It lacks nothing to accompany it. Right, and that is in terms of what is the potion for? What is it the medication against? It's a medication against Yetzahara, the evil inclination. Right? A person has a drive, has a pull towards doing that which is harmful to himself and to others. And that's a natural pull within a person. That we call the Yetzahara. So this is the tonic against that pull. This is what helps to dull that pull and saves us from that. From being drawn in that direction. Moshe l'odom shehikas b'noi. Right, it's an analogy. This again is from the Gemara. It's an analogy of a man who hit his son. He hit his son, he bruised his son. So then his father, after he hit his son, he put a dressing on the wound. And he said, Amale b'ni calls manshir tiazu al makoscho. As long as you keep this dressing on your wound, you can eat whatever you like. The Rashi says there, afilu dvash. As long as you're the, right, it's an analogy, it's not the true story. As long as you're wearing this dressing on your wound, you can eat whatever you want, whatever is your pleasure. And Rashi says, afilu dvash, even honey. You want to eat lots of honey, you like honey, eat honey. Chol mine masika. All types of sweets. You like sweets, you have a sweet tooth, or all sorts of sweets. Shekashim lamaka, even things that normally would be bad if you had a wound like this. Normally things that the doctor would say, you have such a wound, you should avoid such sweets, such foods. Even such foods which normally would be bad, you can enjoy them all. As long as you keep the dressing on the wound, as long as you don't remove the dressing, and atom isyari, you have nothing to be scared of. Nim atam aviro, but if you will remove this dressing from the wound, harehi male unumi, so then it will become infected, and that's it. So then it's disastrous. If you keep the dressing on, enjoy what you want. If you take the dressing off, you're in trouble. Kacha kodesh bochu, that's the analogy. Kacha kodesh bochu amale Yisrael. Similarly, Hashem said to the Jewish people, Bini, my sons, barosi yetzahora, I created the evil inclination. Barosi lo Torah tavlin, and I created the Torah as the antidote. Which means as follows. Remember, the story was what? The father hit the son. Who inflicted the bruise? The father. The father hit his son. So that's the analogy. The nimshal of that is Hashem created the Yetzer. The Yetzer is an evil force, and it's something that's harmful to us, hurts us. Hashem created it. Where did this evil force come from? Who's the one who's making our lives so miserable? Hashem himself gave us this force. Right? Hashem created the Yetzirah. However, he also created the antidote. The antidote is the Torah. So therefore, that's the dressing on the wound. As long as you keep the dressing on the wound, you're protected, nothing will harm you, and you can enjoy your lives. But if you remove the dressing, then you're in big trouble. L'chayra mashma mizeh. So from this analogy we understand Shatoy Metaveles Hayetzo. The Torah is the one that spices the Yetzer. In other words, it directs the Yetzer Hora in a positive direction. At metaveles leyetzer, shegam im yelech bedak hayetzer, right, that even if a person does follow his yetzer, remember the analogy was, as long as you're wearing the wound, the dressing, sorry, you can eat what you want, you can even eat honey, you can even eat sweets. As long as, even if you'll go in the way of the yetzer hara, metaveles oisav v'naseh tov, it'll spice the yetzer hara, it'll dress the yetzer, it'll be the dressing that you add, the spices and the sauces that you add to the yetzer hara, v'naseh tov, and it'll be good. The yetzer will be good. K'mul ha-moshel anal, ein atam b'siyah, you don't have to be scared. Right. And the way we could understand it possibly, without looking ahead in the Rav Dessler, is that the Yetzer is also what we call the Nefesh HaBahami, is the animal soul, and the animal soul is interested in the survival and well-being of the body, and therefore the animal soul says, eat, drink, you know, rest, don't exert yourself, right? Take care of your physicality, take care of your body, make sure that you have the best of the best. So therefore, that's also important for our survival. Because just like an animal, it relies on its instinct to survive, that it knows how to, if it's hungry, it knows to look for food, knows to look for drink, knows how to run away from physical danger. So that's the animal soul does that for us as well. We call the nefesh, who does that for us as well. So therefore, but however, it also leads us to sin, leads us to overindulgence, leads us to immorality, that just because that's what the body desires, the body has lowly lusts. However, the Torah can be the tavlin, the Torah can, so to speak, leash it, put the yetzer on a leash. It's good if you have an animal, as long as you leash it, so it's okay, as long as the animal's not your boss, you're not you're the boss of the animal and not the other way around. So says Rav Dessler as follows, the moshel hazeh umayle numi. Right. What it says in the analogy, that it would create infection, that would be in the subject of the analogy. In other words, the message is what's the equivalent of getting an infection? Right? The father inflicted a wound and he said, don't take off the dressing, you'll get an infection. So what's getting the infection? That's being handed over to the Yetzer Hara, where the Yetzer Hara becomes our boss. The Yetzer takes charge of us. He calls the shots. He's in charge. Adam haborech misoinoi, achofetz lahagoi nefesh. Like someone who's running away from his enemy, who wants to kill him. And a person is running away from his enemy and some friends. He sees people along the side of the road. He says, "Help me, help me! My enemy is pursuing." And they say, "Come, come with us. We'll protect you." And they say, "Hide over here." And when the enemy comes along, they say, "He's hiding over here." Right? They actually deliver us to our enemy. Right? So these are nice friends, that is. Right? So that's the idea that nimsorim biyadei yetzer, we can be delivered to our enemy, to the Yetzer Hara, who is the murderer who wants to kill us. We're just saying that unless we take the tonic that the Torah provides, we use the tonic of the Torah, so really we don't have any way of escaping the enemy. On the contrary, we're led to the enemy. We ourselves run to our own enemy. We run to the murderer and we present ourselves to the murderer who's going to harm us, who's going to hurt us. It's only by occupying ourselves with the Torah, with a Torah lifestyle, that we're able to flee. Now, what does it mean, being occupied in Torah? See, the word asik means business. Right? You speak about a business, it's called an asik. So what does it mean to busy ourselves with Torah, to be occupied with Torah? So normally a person has a business, he's there from the beginning of the day to the end of the day. And even when he goes home, he's busy making accounts and making calculations and thinking about his business the whole time. So to be occupied in something is to be involved in it, very much so. So what does it mean here to be occupied in Torah? Oisek peirush asiyas hadvorim she'elehem shifos ha'ikoris. A business means doing those things, occupying yourself with those things which is your main drive, your main ambition. Right, that's a business. A business is something that which you're occupied with means something that which is your main concern. Right? That's also, you call a business a concern. That's what we call a business, right? This person's concern, or his business concern. So therefore, it means that the Torah has become your major concern. Right? Your major occupation means your major concern, your major drive, your major ambition, your major hope. Again, the same thing, a businessman, his main hope is that his business should flourish, that it should grow, that he should open 100 branches, he should take over the world and take over his competition, etc. So therefore, that's the ambition. That means Eisek HaTorah means the ambition of the Torah, the ambition of the Torah. Hamamalis is called Nafshoi, and as such, being the major ambition of the person, it should fill his whole self. It should become a dream that fills his self. To such a degree that he doesn't forget about it at any time. He's on, right? Sometimes you speak with people, you see that nowadays, you know, they're talking to you, but they, you know, with one eye they're looking at their cell phone, you know, maybe a message is coming in, right? And they, right? They've got these antenna ears, you know, tick, a drink, no. And he's looking at his cell phone, he's talking to you, but he's not talking to you, because he's, so in other words, he's on the alert for what's coming in. So this is Eino Masiach Daitim Menu. His mind is never removed from it. His mind is on it all the time, even though he's busy doing other things. He's at a bar mitzvah, he's at a wedding, whatever it is, but the cell phone is there. So the same thing, the occupation in the Torah lifestyle is that we're always aware of this ambition, of this drive of ours. Eino Masiach Daitim Menu, Kmo Inyan Apanoso, Dishas Kovid Kedoyme. Like you have people who are pursue their livelihood, or pursue their prestige, etc. So it becomes a total preoccupation, totally preoccupied with it. The came it's Savinish Diashifos Seinu Bit Litera, and so the Torah has commanded us that this should be our ambition. Our ambition should be the Torah lifestyle. We recite every morning. That's all of us. We recite the bracha that he has commanded us to occupy ourselves. La'asik. La'asik is to occupy ourselves, to involve ourselves, to engage in the ways of the Torah, the words of the Torah. Shapirish la'asik, u'shenir amelim b'Torah, which is to say we should be toiling in Torah. Amelim b'Torah means toiling over. Toiling, it means that you're obsessed with it. We should be obsessed with what Torah does for us. K'mo shekosu b'Torah is kohani. Like one of the commentaries, the Toyas Kohanim says that it's a man does not labor unless it's something that he has a ambition towards, that he has a drive towards. And it's that which you'll toil over, something you really work over, something that you couldn't be bothered, something that doesn't interest you. So even though someone's standing over you and watching you work, you're going to do it in a sort of a slap type of way. You don't do it with disinterest. You do it in a half-hearted way, even though you're being forced to do something, and you'll do it with a half-hearted way. It's not really, you won't really do it fully. So that's not called toiling. So therefore, ambition here means that you will be laboring and that it'll be running through your head constantly. Right, is almost like a oppression. Right, it's almost something that which is oppressive to us. His amtsus b'chol alei b'shas matzah meriva is that when one puts all of his efforts into something, like in the time of a battle or of a war, right, if you've been threatened with someone, someone's coming to fight with you, or someone's coming to rob you or to hurt you, so then all your senses are suddenly alert. Someone who's in a situation of danger. So then he's totally awake. You know, he's totally, right? He's real physical danger. He's totally awake. So that's the type of alertness we should be ideally striving towards. This is what the Torah means. We have to be occupied with Torah. So what we actually are defining here is the type of battle we have with the Yetzer Hara through the Torah. In other words, it is really a war. It's really a war, and it's two sides, and you're being drawn from the one side to the other side, and you have to be on your guard. You have to be willing to fight it. In Adam Yassim, it's called Shif Osel Torah. If a person puts all of his drive towards the Torah, Ein Mokem Le'etzel Le'kanes Elov. So if it becomes his total occupation, the Torah is his total involvement, his total interest, So there is no space, there's no place for the Yetzer to come and persuade him away from the Torah, because that is his, you know, he's not interested. Some people, they're so involved with something, you can't even talk to them. They're so busy doing something, you can talk to them, they're not even listening. So the same thing, a person becomes occupied with a Torah drive, which we're still going to speak a bit about more. So really you can't talk to him. The Yetzer, there's no one to talk to him. He's not available, he's not home, he's not listening to the Yetzer. Which is to say that there's no crack. There are no cracks that the Yetzer Hara can get through. It is sogu mamish b'thonov, we call it sight. He's totally sealed off. He becomes totally, his focus is such a degree that he's totally sealed off from any side. Like, for instance, that we have yesgira mifnei ha'mayim, we have sometimes something is sealed where it's waterproof. Right, certain things are waterproof. The water can't get in. Right? Sometimes you have something that's airproof. That's even a stronger sealing. So that's the type of sealing that we need. Oila shteim, right? A higher degree than waterproofing or airproofing is a skir bifnei yetzahara. Is to seal ourselves off from the yetzahara. The yetzahara has no entrance into our lives. Ach, im ach yasiach odom daito minatira. However, if a person removes himself from Torah, which again we say is a Torah living, a Torah lifestyle, I am a Torah Jew, I live a Torah lifestyle, and therefore I do the will of Hashem, that's who I am, that's what I am. If a person then will be distracted from this ambition, I feel a karega, if we're saying we have to be airtight, you have to be watertight, so it comes out that if you distract yourself from the purpose of your life, really what you're doing with your life, even momentarily, nimsahu biyad yetzer. So that's already a crack, that's already where the yetzer can get in. That's where he comes in with all sorts of suggestions, all sorts of ideas, and he filters himself in. But if there is a distraction, then the yetzer gets permission to enter your psyche, to enter into your mind. He starts talking to you.
Right.
He brings as a proof, the story was that when Moshe Rabbeinu went up the mountain for 40 days after the giving of the Ten Commandments, Moshe Rabbeinu went up the mountain for 40 days, and the verse says that they saw that he was late. They saw the 40 days has passed, Moshe Rabbeinu is not coming back. So it said they started being surprised, you know, where is he? Right? Why is he late? Where is he? So that became the discussion. You know, where's Moshe? You know, it's late, and look, he said he's going to be back. And so that became the whole conversation. He's late, he's not here. So the commentaries say that instead of them being preoccupied with the fact that he's late, they should have been litmual atzman shelo yevinu dvarav yofi. They should have said, you know, we thought they should have been worried about themselves, not worried where's he. They should have worried, you know, maybe we're not okay. How come he's late? Maybe something's wrong with us. We didn't listen to him. They immediately suspected something's wrong with him. You know that he's late. You know he's letting us down. You know you're late again. So Moshe Rabbeinu is late. You know where were you? We were waiting for you. But instead of being surprised with him, they should have been surprised themselves. You know maybe we weren't listening properly when he said 40 days. What did he mean? Maybe he meant something else. Right, we are making the mistake. So immediately, instead of pointing fingers at themselves, they started pointing fingers at Moshe. So, that's what they should have said. They should have understood that what Moshe Rabbeinu is doing is at the command of Hashem. He went up the mountain to speak to Hashem. The words of Hashem don't change. What Hashem said, what Moshe said from Hashem, that he's going to 40 days. That has to be right. And if he's not back, then he's right, we're wrong. So this preoccupation, they already doubted that the package deal that Moshe Rabbeinu is bringing them into, which is the Torah, there's a problem with it. It's faulty. You just bought something, but it's a faulty product. There's something wrong with it. So this loss of focus, this already gave an in to the Satan to come and create a whole confusion in the world. The Satan at this point came and said, well, Moshe died. Moshe died. That's what happened. So now, you know, everything's upset. Well, you know, everything's, so the whole plan's off. Everything that we're planning, the wedding's off, right? Because, you know, the groom died. So there's no more wedding. For that idea to creep into the Jewish people, to upset the whole apple cart, was this distraction, not being focused on what the issue is, was not worrying about, are they performing as they should be performing? Am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing with my life? And rather worrying about other things, that was already like a crack, a crack in the container. That's already the water seeping in. Now, here comes the question which concerns us the most. Next paragraph. Umay yase adam asher maisav v'masav v'matan. What therefore should a person do whose actions are in the physical world? Let's say a person who's a businessman, or a person he's got a job, a person's running a home. So his occupation is in the physical world. Right? We're speaking so far, a person has to be totally devoted to the Torah, has to be, his total drive, his total ambition is towards Torah learning and Torah lifestyle. So practically though, what happens to a person who's occupied in the physical world? Right? Real occupation, he's got a job, whatever it is, he's looking after the kids, he's looking after a house. Doesn't that mean that he will remove his mind from Torah? We said that to save ourselves from the Yetzirah, we need to be totally focused on our Torah obligation, our Torah ambition, our Torah dream, reaching the dream of the Torah, the dream of the Torah which ultimately leads us to Mashiach and the Beis Hamikdash and Geula, etc. The dream of the Torah, we're working towards our dream, we're working towards our vision. So surely we're going to be distracted from the Torah, from the Torah dream. So he says, the emes ain't okay, and it's not so at all. We don't have to be distracted at all. Right, this is the classical example. We say that Zvulun Yisachar were two brothers, and both of them were occupied in Torah. Zvulun Yisachar had a deal between them, that the one would learn and the other would support his brother. One was occupied in learning, was Yisachar, and the other one was occupied in not only financing himself, not only keeping himself going, but also keeping his brother and his brother's family going. So he was upholding the Torah. So one was occupied in, he was in the Beis Midrash, and the other one was in the businessman. He was out in with his ships, with his boats, with his commerce, with his clients, etc. However, the ambition of both of them was the same ambition. As even though he's out there and he's busy, he's in the business world, he's out in the physical world, etc., the ambition of both of them was the same ambition, to empower the Torah and to enlarge it. They wanted, he's working towards the enlarging of the Torah. So only this ambition is what filled their hearts. This is the dream. This is what they're working. They're striving towards. So therefore, this is what fills the heart. Right? We're speaking about being waterproof or airproof from the Eitz Hara. So what are we waterproofing? What needs to be waterproofed or airproofed? It's the heart. The heart is where all the desires are, where the dream is, where the hope is. There's a vision. A person has a vision of reaching something great. That has to be sealed from the Eitz Hara. That vision shouldn't be spoiled. As the verse tells us, Zvulun, rejoice in your going out. He's going out. He's going out to do business deals. He's going out to the oceans, to ships, to do his commerce. So the pasuk says he rejoices in going out. He's going out into the material world, but he rejoices in his going out because he knows he's promoting Yisachar who's sitting in the tent. So therefore he's happy, it's working. The business, right? The plan is working because whatever he's doing, even though it's something outside, it's for this dream. He's enlarging. It's all towards this. It's all towards building the dream. Simcha achas v'shif achas v'shnehim. They have the same joy and they have the same drive, the same ambition, the same dream. Ve'einai ra'isi bal melocha poshut, says Rav Desle, with my own eyes I saw a simple craftsman. Chayit ama'aretz, he was an unlearned tailor. This is probably Rav Desle in his youth in Eastern Europe. So he knew in his town there was this very simple tailor. Asher kol iske b'melochta ya'ach, tailor levad. His whole occupation in his work, right, he was busy sewing from morning till night, was only for the Torah. Kikol makshavtu v'shifos hayudvukus menekud akas. All of his thoughts and all of his drives was all focused on a single hope, a single point. Shubona v'chasona v'gdoyle Torah, that his sons and his sons-in-law should be Torah scholars. That's all he wanted. So he's busy, he's sewing suits and sewing buttons and doing hems and whatever, etc. Sitting there with his needle and his thimble the whole day. But he's working towards these Torah scholars that he's supporting, right? With a few pennies that he's earning, he's going to be producing these, and that's his occupation. That's what he's doing. What are you doing? You're sewing suits. No, I'm building the Jewish people. I'm building the Jewish dream. That's what I'm doing. That's what I'm really doing. Right? My actual physical obligation is just the means, but the end is the stream. He himself used to survive on bread and water. And every single coin that he profited, he used to live for himself on the bare minimum, bare necessities, and every coin that he profited, that he saved, would be devoted to this holy goal, this holy objective. It comes out that all of his actions are considered Eisek HaTorah. This is what he's working towards. So therefore every action, the most mundane action, the most simple action, is all considered Eisek HaTorah. It's occupying himself in Torah, in the Torah lifestyle. But never is any Jew permitted to occupy himself in the physical world in a way where his ambition is towards the physical world. That's to be occupied in the material world for the sake of the Torah dream. That's kosher, that's a mitzvah, that's ideal, that's wonderful, it's fantastic. A person, even though he's busy with the business world, the financial world, the physical world, the material world, he's working as a job. Even if he's doing it for the sake of the Torah, that becomes ideal. But if he's doing it for the sake of the physical world, if he's busy with the physical world for building up the physical world, his interest in is building up his business, building up his financial wealth, building up his financial reputation, etc. He wants to build the physical world. So that the Torah never ever permitted. Because that can never be the dream. Our dream can never be this world, should be unreal, should be unbelievable. That's forbidden, that should be the dream. Lichyo is chayim areivim, etc. A person wants a pleasant lifestyle, a pleasant, very comfortable lifestyle. So therefore he's building the physical world so he should be comfortable for his own physical comfort, comfort of his family. So that is never, that chas v'sholem should never be the dream. If that becomes the dream, if the dream becomes the comforts of this world, so then he is being handed over to his Yetzirah. Right? That was the analogy we gave before, the people who trapped the person who was running, and they just gave him over to his enemy. And he falls into his hands. Ubekisvei Rashaz, Heavy Rayam Fureshus Nazem, Idivre Tesis Brochus. The Rav Simcha Zissel, Alt of Kelm, brings a proof for this idea from the Gemara. It says there, the Tesis there asks in the Gemara, Maishnas Misukkah. Why is the Brocha we make on Torah different from the Brocha we make on Sukkah? Shetzarek Levarech Alkol Su'uda. Right, when you go into a Sukkah on Sukkahs, so every time you come into the Sukkah, you have to make a new Brocha, Leishev Basukkah. I'm sitting in the Sukkah. I make a Brocha, then I'm sitting in the Sukkah. But if I go out and I do something, I do some shopping, or I go off to davening, I go to shul, and then I come back. It could be I come back 10 minutes later, 15 minutes later, and I go into the Sukkah, I have to make a new Brocha for the Sukkah. Every time you come into the Sukkah, as long as you've left it in an absolute way, you went off somewhere else, and you come back into the Sukkah, you have to make a new Brocha for the Sukkah. Whereas by Torah, you make a brocha in the morning, and it doesn't matter what you do. Right? Even let's say a person is working an 8-hour job, he makes a brocha in the morning for the Torah. At night he comes back, he's got a shiur at night. That's it. The brocha he made in the morning is good for the night as well. So why is it different? The sukkah, you just leave it for a few minutes because you're doing something else. Now you have to make a new brocha. Torah, you leave it almost the whole day, and you come back to a Torah class at night. You don't need a new brocha. You don't need a new brocha. The brocha you made in the morning, because you're busy with Torah, is good for the whole day. What's the difference? I left it. I've been away from Torah study. You know, I've been busy. I've been with clients. I've been on the phone. I've been doing. I haven't been thinking of Torah. I haven't been looking at the Torah. So this is Tosfos' question: why don't I need a new bracha for the Torah? So says the Tosfos, the shiny Torah, she'enu miyayish daitu. The Tosfos says they know Torah is different because it never leaves your mind. All of those occupations, all of those phone calls, all that business that you were doing was all for the Torah objective. So therefore it never left your mind, because you're only doing it because, right, like that tailor. The tailor was sewing suits all day. He's sewing it for his sons, and his children are going to be Torah scholars. So it's all for the Torah. So therefore all of these businesses, all he's running around, all of his shopping, whatever it is that he's doing, is all for Torah. So therefore he never leaves his mind. He never abandons that ideal. Right, a person is totally always obligated to be enhancing the Torah dream, and therefore that's the way we regard it. So therefore, a person who's living for this dream is the same as someone who's sitting in the Beis Midrash and not leaving the Beis Midrash the whole day. Someone sitting in the shul the entire day and doesn't walk out at all. So he's the same as this person, has the Torah in mind, even though he's busy doing 101 things. Seemingly, the parallel doesn't look very good. It doesn't seem to be the same at all. Surely when a person is busy with his business, that's what he's thinking about. He's thinking about the next phone call he has to make. He's thinking about what he has to shop, he has to hide. He's busy making lists. He's not thinking of the Torah. He's not thinking of Torah right now. He's thinking about his business at hand. So therefore his mind is totally away from the Torah. Explanations like we said before. Because since the objective is for Torah, even though he's not consciously thinking of Torah, but he right at the back of his mind, he knows he's doing this all only because he wants to enhance the Torah lifestyle. He wants to enhance the Torah family. Whatever it is, he's doing it for his obligation towards Hashem to build the Torah, to build Torah in this world. So this is not considered as removing your mind. Such a person is considered as being busy with Torah all day, and therefore, since he doesn't stop from the Torah, he doesn't need a new bracha. And even though he was away from whatever it was, he was away from his study, whatever it is, he was never away, because it's all for the Torah. This really is the approach. V'im yoyim ha'adam. Now, if a person will say, Shayetza ena metanyen ve'ike ele im bnei adam choytim harbe v'chatoim v'doyri. If a person will erroneously say that the Yetzer is really only interested with sinning sinners who do big sins, maybe the Yetzer is really, really interested in those people who are big sinners, who are involved in sinning all day, and he's really interested in big sins, right? That's his business, the big sins. Let's just see that Gemara again, just see a little bit more. It says over there, the Yetzer Hara's involvement in total is with you. The Yetzer Hara is totally interested in everything you do. He's looking, as we said before, right? We want no crack. Like the water wants to seep into the container, so the water surrounds the container all over, and it's just waiting for the smallest crack, and then it's going to come in. It's ready. The crack can be anywhere. Any side of the container, wherever the crack might be, that's where it's going to start oozing in, right? Just squeezing another drop in. It's just surround, just start hovering around, waiting to come in. So that's what the Gemara says about the Yetzer. He's with us all the time. He's always looking for that crack. He's just looking for that single moment that he can come in, right? And enter our lives. This is concerning every individual. The Yetzer is totally concerned with that individual as if he's the only person in the world. He's the total project of the Yetzer. The Yetzer makes each and every one of us one. He's 100% project. He's busy with trying to get in. He wants to get in, and he wants to set up shop. He wants to enter into our minds, into our personalities. That's what we have to be aware of. So that's what we were saying before. Therefore, our ambition has to be 100% a Torah ambition. Also the Gemara brings there, it says that if you want, if you desire it, you can rule over him. Right, a person is able to control his Yetzar, he's able to rule over him. We mentioned before the Yetzar is also beneficial to the person if you can control it properly, so it can help you along, remind you that you need to eat, remind you that you need to take care of your physical needs, so therefore it's useful to you. If you want that control over him, you want him to be your servant, you can have it. It all depends on wanting it. If you want the Yetzar to be your servant, to serve you, so you can rule over him. However, we should never imagine that the way to control the Yetzar is with any other device other than a Torah. The only way we can take control of him is by having a Torah dream. Right? Right? The Gemara says, if you want, you can rule over him. So Rashi says there, if you want, occupy yourself with Torah and you will rule over him. Right? By making this, this is our occupation, this is our dream, this is our aspiration, so then everything else falls into place. Everything else is there. And that's what we said in the beginning, you can eat the honey and you can eat the sweets, etc. If you just keep the dressing on the wound, so then everything's fine. Right? You can still you can enjoy the sweets as well. You can enjoy the good things of this world as well. Right? Even the good things, the amusements and the different entertainment, whatever it is, right? Kosher entertainment. So that also there's room for it in part of the Torah lifestyle you're building. You can incorporate it and it's under control. And it's not going to infect you. It's not going to hurt you in any way. Zera Eitzei Chida. This is the only advice available to us. Lasek Vatera, to occupy ourselves with, as we said before, the Torah lifestyle. The Oifen Shelo Yeshum Hesach Hadas Menu. That one is not distracted from it at all. Oid Kos of Sham Rav Simcha Zissel. Also the Altam of Kelm writes the Lama Nizka Torah Chet. Adam Arishon. And another question he asks. He asks, why did the Torah tell us the story of the sin of Adam Arishon? Why did the Torah tell us how Adam Arishon sinned? Why is that story important to us? We know that Hashem never desired when Yeshua was conquering Eretz Yisrael. He came and he conquered Yericho. So he said, no one should take any of the booty. So there was a person who took booty, and because of that, the next battle they lost. And so who was that? That was a man by the name of Achan who took some booty. So how come Hashem never told Yeshua? Hashem never informed before that war. Yeshua had no inkling that this is what had happened. This is what Achan had done. So we see that Hashem said, "I'm not a tattletaler. It's not my business. You know, you have to take care of your people. I'm not going to come and tattletale to you who took booty." So we see Hashem is not interested in just telling us bad things about people unless there's an objective. Right? Hashem has no reason to tell us the story of Adam Arishon. Why is that story told to us at all, that they sinned in the Garden of Eden? Why must we know that story? Why is that story important to us? So the answer is because there's something we need to learn from it. That's the only reason Hashem will share such information with us, never to put anyone down, but just because we can learn from it. So this is what he brings in. Even though there are many sinners that are mentioned through the Torah, through the prophets, they're only mentioned in order to learn. Whenever the Torah tells us a story about someone who sinned, it's only because there's some lesson to. And there are many other sinners that were never mentioned. We're not interested in mentioning them. We're not interested in lists of, you know, who did what and when and where. You know, give us the details, the juicy details of all these sins. Right? We're never interested in that. But if there's a specific sin where there's a lesson, where there's a message, then it is brought in the Torah. And this itself gives merit to the sinners. Because if we can learn from those sinners, from their mistakes, so that gives them credit. A sinner who can act as an example to others that they shouldn't do the same thing, that gives him credit in the world to come for his, right? It gives him credit because other people are at least learning from his mistake. That at least he gets points for himself. Alakoi chodim echeid zayab madreges gan Eden. So what is the message of the story of Adam Arishan? So before he sinned, he was on the level of Gan Eden. Right? And seemingly, what lesson could there be? Before that, he was on the level of Gan Eden. This is something that doesn't apply to us at all, seemingly. But nothing to do with us. We're not in Gan Eden. We've never been to Gan Eden. No one ever showed us Gan Eden. So therefore, what's the story got to do with us? He was in Gan Eden. Yeah, good for him. You know, that does, how does that help me along? Right? So therefore, it's Leina Chatoim Boim Yitzad Amidus. My us, we sin because of bad habits, bad attributes, bad character. Our taivas, our different lusts we have, different urges we have, and negias we have, different biases. We're biased towards certain actions, certain people. So we have biases built into our personalities. Adam Arishan was born totally clean, totally pure. He didn't even have a Yetzirah within himself. It was something external, wasn't something that was in him. So therefore, what is our connection with Adam Arishan, who was born so perfect, that the Torah should be telling us his story? The answer is, there's much, much to be learned from his sin. And Adam Arishan had Seifu, maybe it means Seifa Ulam at Seifu. He had the ability to see from one end of the world to the other. Pirish, Shetuchen Kolabriya Hayagolu Lefonov, which means that he could see. What does it mean he saw from one end of the world to the other? What does that mean? It means that the idea behind the creation, something that was open to him, he saw what the plan was. He could see the great picture. He could see really what it was all about. What is life about? What is our time in this world? What's it about? What are we doing here? What's it all about? He could actually, that was open to him, that was obvious to him. He gave different names to the different creatures because he saw their function. How are they useful? How do they help the world along? The world itself has its goals to reach. So he could see that every element of creation, how it was contributing towards reaching the final goal. He could explain its meaning, its content in the world, its function in the world. And this is what he brings to Zohar that says, right, that every prophet was able to suckle from one of the drops of the 48 drops of Gan Eden. Something that's called 48 drops of some sort of prophetic inspiration. And every prophet was able to get one of those drops. That's all the prophecy of all the prophets that we have. There were 48 prophets. So each one was able to get one of the drops of inspiration of prophecy that came from Gan Eden. Adam Arishan, when he was in Gan Eden, he mishtamish bekula, he could use it all. It was all available to him. Ainu Mandragas Gan Eden, he was at the level of Gan Eden. That was his place. That was his home. That's where he was, because that's who he was. However, after being distracted, a light distraction, and chatting with the snake came along for a conversation. Let's talk. So after that chat with the snake, so then the sin came about. So therefore, what hope is there for us? He was so spiritual, and yet he stumbled into this trap. So what about us, that we are so physical, we are so materially minded, we are so occupied in this physical world? So what hope is there for us? So what we have to learn from this is how much we can lose out by being distracted. Right? This is really his problem was he allowed himself to be distracted, and that was his downfall. This is the lesson to us. We can save ourselves from this same problem by protecting ourselves from distraction. Just one final idea, quickly. It says in the Gemara, who merits the world to come? Someone who places geula next to tefillah, right? We say in the morning, in the davening, in the morning and in the night as well, we have the brachas of the Shema. The brachas of the Shema culminate with the bracha Ga'al Yisrael, Hashem redeems Israel. Right? And then straight after that, according to the Siddur, we daven Shmoneh Esrei. We daven the Amida, the silent prayer. So it's not my chance the one is next to each other. That's how it's supposed to be. First we're supposed to praise Hashem, thank Hashem for redeeming us, took us out of Egypt, and then immediately we're supposed to daven the Shmoneh Esrei straight after that. So the Gemara says that if someone is careful to have Geula, that Brocha, straight next to the Shmoneh Esrei, without any interruption, that's already a ticket to the world to come. That already guarantees a share in the world to come. That he's always careful that the Brocha of Geula is immediately followed with the Shmoneh Esrei. Right? And that's for the evening prayer, for the morning prayer. So the question is why do we need that connection? The Altar of Kelm asks, "Hayim bevokosh tzochonim mimeni zbor shemamim shakul bo miyitzu yisbor v'shoylel kol akoyach be'atzmoi min ateva im ein bezedai kiruv elav yisbor." The Altar of Kelm asks, why isn't the Shmoneh Esrei itself a key to the world to come? What is the Shmoneh Esrei? What is the silent prayer? The silent prayer is you get up and you ask Hashem for all you need, all your requests for health and for panosa and for children and whatever it is, right? Everything you possibly want, you ask in the Shmoneh Esrei. Which is to say that you are saying, in my getting up and davening to Hashem, you are saying that I trust in you, Hashem. I'm relying on you, I'm putting my trust in you, and I'm looking to you to supply me all my needs. So isn't that by itself, isn't that enough that we should be guaranteed the world to come? By putting our trust in Hashem and asking Hashem for all of our needs, surely that's enough for us to be guaranteed a share in the world to come. Right? We're trusting Hashem, we're looking to Hashem, so therefore we're connecting with Him. Isn't that enough? Why do we need, in addition, that brocha to thank Hashem for taking us out of Egypt comes immediately before the Shmoneh Esrei? Why do we need that connection? Why is that the key to the world to come and not just the Shmoneh Esrei in and of itself? So he answers, "Matiretz shesmichas gula letfila haydu shaloi lahafsi klal min dveikus achas lechavirta." The idea of putting the brocha of Geula, thanking Hashem for taking us out of Egypt, putting it right next to davening to Hashem for our own needs, a different topic, different subject, is that there's no interruptions. We're in the flow. We keep flow. We keep moving. Right? We have one activity which connects us with Hashem, and then we go straight into another activity that connects us with Hashem, and there's no breaks. There's no intervals. There's no pauses in between. There's no cracks. And he says that's the idea. The idea is that what we need is a life of flow, where all of our activities, ideally, and really this is the big message, all of our activities ideally should be geared towards getting us closer to Hashem, getting us closer to the Torah dream, the Torah ideal, preparing ourselves to come closer and closer to Hashem and to bring Hashem's presence into our lives. That's all of our actions, all of our activities. And as we go from activity to activity, we have to keep that, so to speak, keep it in mind, keep that in the at the back of our mind, that that's all for it's all for the needs of this dream. There should be no cracks at all. There should be no breaks at all. With this, we are guaranteed our share in the world to come.